Welcome to the Northeast Divide podcast. I'm your host, John Lane, and I'm joined, as ever, with Anth. And I need to state, because we can't show it through the normal symbolism that we do, that I'm a Newcastle United fan and Anth is our Sunderland fan. We've had a couple of technical difficulties, but we can see each other this week, which is a nice change from what we had the other week. If you like the pod, I ask you again to like, press the button to say that you like it. And if you've got any feedback, please leave your comments in your providers as well. And we also have social media accounts on X and Instagram. The last podcast I recorded was with football finance expert Kieran Maguire of the Price of Football podcast. Very lucky that he gave some of his Easter Saturday morning when his grandkids were around to spend some time talking to us about football finance. You've had a chance to listen to it. Really just want an overview of your thoughts overall in terms of what you found in terms of what he said about the different contrasting options Newcastle and Sunderland have and what's kind of interesting about it, I suppose.
Oh, the cat. Do you know what? What a lovely fella. What a lovely fella. Very knowledgeable. Obviously, his love of the game comes through. He's got a few contacts, hasn't he?
Just a couple.
Yeah, a couple, indeed. Just a really nice fella. You know, the monetary side of the game, unless you're a bog-standard football supporter like me, you just like to know how much you've got in the purse at the start of the season to spend on transfers, etc., blah, blah, blah. The rest of it sort of, you know, unless you've got the financial backing, I suppose. But he made it interesting. He was obviously, he does his university lectures, doesn't he, etc., and he brings football into that to make it a little bit, because number crunching, it's not very exciting, is it? But when it comes to football, I suppose, you know. But yeah, it was interesting. It's amazing that, you know, you lose 20 million a season in the Championship. I didn't know it was that much, to be perfectly honest with you, unless you're bankrolled and you've got, you know, an owner who's willing to take a financial loss, such as your Bristol City, as he said, obviously. But, you know, Kirill Lewis-Dreyfus came in and, you know, with his background and you know, the clubs his father was linked to were thought, maybe there'd be an instant cash flow, and it doesn't quite work out like that, does it? So, but yeah, I mean, the disparity between the financial side of things in the Premier League and the Championship is blatantly there to see. I mean, I think, is it the last place Premiership club, if they get relegated, still get, however, whatever, £100 million in the umbrella?
Yeah, at least
all of that. Yeah,
at least £100
million. Crazy, isn't it? For, you know, bottom of the table, there's 100 million quid. And, you know, like you said, your Leicesters, your Leeds, Southampton's to a certain extent, they've got it all in place with regards to the finances, because they've come down, and it looks like, you know, one or two of them could go back up immediately. So I loved the Charlie Methven story about the 10-page email. I love that. I can just imagine Charlie Methven sat there and he's salmon pink chinos, tip-tapping away with sweat on his brow, listening to the Antichrist of dance music, David Guetta's best hits. I'll be like, oh, no, no, no. So he went right up my estimation for that alone, because Methven, what a parody he was. But anyway, yeah, it was very, very interesting. You know, we obviously the Premiership, that's where the financial rewards are and always will be. The Championship, it's just so competitive, isn't it? And unless you're one of these teams who does come down from the Premiership and is almost ready to bounce back, you will struggle if you're down there for a few seasons. So, you know, who knows what might happen to Sunderland? He mentioned us, which I appreciated. So, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. But it was very interesting, very interesting.
Yeah. I hope he'd mention Sunderland, because he was on the Newcastle and Sunderland podcast.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I think overall, I think the point he made as well, which is really interesting. Obviously, I asked him about the 2016-17 season where Newcastle won the Championship and Brighton came a very close second. Now, I don't know if anyone remembers, we spent something like 100 million in the transfer market, but we'd made 130 odd through selling players. So I think we had a net spend of minus 32 million just, you know, through that kind of trading, I suppose. But we essentially, you know, Rafa Benitez was allowed to build a squad that he felt was going to bring Newcastle back up. And we were overwhelming favourites. There was markets on, you know, will Newcastle go undefeated in the Championship? Will they break 100 points? Neither of which they did. It took And last day, we had to win at home. I think it was Barnsley we were playing at home, 1-3-0. And the Brighton were away at Villa, and Jack Grealish equalised for Villa. And Brighton just needed to win to secure the championship, basically. And we just slowly pulled them back. But the point I made was around that side. And I said to him, look, is there a chance that we're going to see a promotion here, you know, in that kind of style again or not? And he's confident. If a club is well run enough, that can still happen. And he cited Luton as an example. But if you look at Brentford, they've came up and they've stayed up. Obviously, Brighton are still in the Premier League now. So it is possible. And I think, really, that's kind of some hope for you to cling on to. Because actually, if the owners can get themselves in the right way at Sunderland and run the club sustainably and sensibly and try and be smart around stuff, then what you should see then is an opportunity for that promotion to happen. But it's a big ask. And, you know, he said Tony Bloom's put 500 million into Brighton to get them there, but he's done it smartly. I suppose that's it, isn't it? It's how do you try and beat everyone else by being smarter than them. And I think this is when we talk about the model again, isn't it? The model of bringing young players in that can be sold on, but you're going to need some experience sprinkled in there if you're going to have a chance next season, surely.
Well, there's been headlines in the local papers of late with regards to, apparently I wouldn't call it cap in hand, but I don't know the full ins and outs of it, that we've gone to ask for a £20 million loan from some American financial group. No names have been bandied around or mentioned, but it's all very sort of cloak and dagger. It's like, well, what's it for? Is it, will it be for, I don't think it's going to be for squad strengthening. Is it going to be for, obviously, to pay for the new improvements to the ground, the standing area, the floodlights, the pitch, etc. So I think what me as a Sunderland supporter would like is a bit more clarity and a bit more honesty from the owner and, you know, everyone who's involved in the financial side of the club and how those finances are distributed and players, whatever facilities. A bit more clarity on the subject matter, because it's like muddy water at the moment. It's like, what, £20 million cap in hand, American fund. What will they want in return? Will they want an investment within the club? Will they want interest on the payment? It's just all a little bit, I don't know, up in the air. So, yeah, I mean, there was an article today in the Sunderland Echo with regards to how much allegedly every Sunderland player is earning. And I think our biggest earner is Jack Clark, obviously, on about 16,000-17,000. There's a few players not far behind him, but there's a lot of players on not a lot of money when you compare it to Premier League wages.
It's not really something you want out there either, is it, really? Because, like, you know, if you've got, as you say, if you've got a Premier League... Now, I've already made my opinion on Jack Clark quite clear. I think he's a very good championship player, but I don't think he's good enough for the Premier League. And I think when he's had an opportunity to show that, we've talked about it before in January, he didn't kind of show what he needed to. We're getting some interference, so I apologise for those viewers. But we'll keep talking. But I think the thing is it, you know, a newly promoted club or a fighting relegation club might look at that and go, actually, you know, I could say to Jack Clark that I could double his wages, and it's an attractive offer for the player. It's a good offer for the club. So. Yep. You've got to kind of consider that, haven't you? I thought it was interesting what you said about Staveley. He said that, you know, there's a bit of a circus around there. He didn't tell me any of the off-air stories. I didn't ask him about any of that. But I thought it was interesting. Look, we're really, really lucky to have him. And look, anyone who hasn't heard of Kieran or heard his stuff before, Price of Football podcast, it's usually a Monday and a Thursday that episodes are released, and then occasionally there's a special on a Friday, which is like an interview, but he's also written a couple of books as well, so to check him out if you haven't already. But I think, to be fair, I think the draw is very much probably the other way. I think he doesn't need as much plugging as we do. I'm going to move on and talk about what has been the most insane Easter weekend for football for Newcastle and Sunderland, I think. And so I've been lucky enough. I was at St James's Park on Saturday and last night for both games. Quite contrasting, really. Did you see any of them?
I saw the 4-3. I saw the goals, and it was for a Newcastle United supporter, it must have been obviously, you know, clenchy bum time, because it was quite an open game, wasn't it? From what I saw, anyway. Barnes's finish was exquisite, the winning goal. So yeah, good win for yous. With regards to last night, I haven't seen any of it as of yet, but obviously public enemy number one, the pantomime villain, was in town, wasn't he, Mr. Jordan Pickford? And apparently supporters were quite vocal and made their feelings known with regards to him, as always. And apparently there was a few people dressed up in dinosaur outfits, very original, yes, indeed, and all that jazz. So, yeah, I know. To be fair, I mean, would you have taken 4 points from six over those two games?
Yeah, I would have. I think, yeah. I'll be honest with you, Anth, right, and it's really frustrating to lose the 2 points at the end the way that we did against Everton. Really, an experienced player who hasn't played for a while and is clearly not fit. And in terms of not just physically, but mentally, he's made a really daft mistake for their penalty, which is, you know, and someone said in one of the WhatsApp groups I'm in, said, oh, well, you know, he's not used to VAR. He probably would have got away with it without VAR. I said, well, yeah, he would have got away with it without VAR, because VAR gave it, like you know, otherwise we just play on, you know, and that's what happened. So look, I think it was daft of him to make the mistake that he did. And it's cost us 2 points. I think the main thing is that if you give me a choice between getting 3 points on Saturday and getting 3 points last night, and I could only have a draw in the other game, it's worked out more favourable for Newcastle in terms of the league table, because by taking those 3 points off West Ham, you know, we're only a point behind them. They only drew against Spurs last night. Mm-hmm. Fulham, I think, they're a little bit further back, but I think if I think about kind of where they are in the table, really, you know, it kind of makes sense, and that's the right result for us as well. I'm getting beat off Forest, so look, some results around us have gone for us, but it was devastating to lose those 2 points, because really Everton were a really poor side. They really were. Didn't kind of try and attack the game, and they never really looked like, so they had a couple of chances but didn't feel all massively dangerous. Obviously they hit the post, and then I say they get gifted this penalty from a really lazy mistake. But got like Saturday, I tell you what, Anthony, I'm glad I don't have a heart condition, because the game on Saturday was just absolutely mad.
Yeah. Do you know, the joy of supporting our respective teams, because I tell you what, they don't half put you through the mill, don't they? I mean, obviously your lot, it was for a neutral, watching your match of the day on a Saturday night and what have you. What a match to watch, you know what I mean? 4-3, fantastic. But for yourself, obviously, not so good. Same with our lot. Good Friday was a very good Friday. Monday, however, was just a very blue Monday, not good at all. So that's the joy of being a football supporter, isn't it? The joy of being a football supporter. But you are in a very good position. And, you know, 4 points out of six, like you said earlier, would you have taken that? Yes. Two good results, considering. I mean, Everton were there for the taking. I've read the match reports, and you know they were there for the taking. But you know, there's still all to play for. Still all to play for.
Absolutely. And obviously, Everton need to fight for their lives, because they could end up with another point deduction. They're only 4 points above the relegation zone. So depending on how many points are taken off them, will then kind of mean how much they're going to have to try and find from somewhere else. But they haven't won since the middle of December in the Premier League. So they've gone, ours is the 13th game when they've failed to win. I can see why. I'll be honest, it's one of the worst teams I've seen at St James's Park. Luton were better than them at St James's for me.
Wow.
And I know that the league table doesn't lie. Luton are in the bottom three. Luton's problem is that they concede too many. So they're great going forward, and they score great goals. or a great amount of goals, but you can't go away to St James's Park, score four goals and not win. You know, and that's that's the kind of area they'll look back on this season as a missed opportunity if they go down, because of those kind of games where, you know, they've been in control or they've got themselves ahead and then they've ended up kind of conceding later. So speaking of Blue Mondays, but Good Friday was a really great start of the weekend for you and probably came out of nowhere, you'd say.
Totally. I mean, I was expecting a draw at Cardiff City, but to be fair, we played really well. We were very well organised. It looked like the players were confident, even though we had a run of bad defeats and bad performances. The first 11's never the same week in, week out, and it's obviously because we've got players coming back from injury. But he played a masterstroke. He played Job up front. He played Bellingham up front, and he was tremendous. He was big. He was strong. He ran down the flanks. He did all the dirty work, and he got a great striker's goal sliding in. And he fully deserved it. I think he got a rating of 9 out of 10 in most papers, but could have been 10 out of 10. Some were saying it was almost a complete centre forwards performance. And I know he can play in that position, even though I think he's gone on record and said that his favourite position is obviously midfield, attacking midfield, whatever. So, but I loved afterwards. I mean, I really like the lad. He's got a mature head on his shoulders, obviously like his brother. The post-match interview, and he said, "I'm not asked where I play as long as I play in red and white." And I just thought, you know what, you've endeared yourself even more to the supporters. So, yeah, as for the Monday, it was just, I can't even describe it. It was like there were strangers. I mean, he had Roberts back from injury. I mean, he gave the ball away cheaply. He was terrible, to be fair. He wasn't fully fit. We could see that. And, you know, Blackburn seized every opportunity and all the goals were plundered within sort of, you know, within a certain area of the box, and the defensive lapses were just terrible. And I expected more from the likes of Ballard and Hume, etc. So it was just a total contrast. And we got nothing out of the game on Monday, and that's exactly what we deserved. And all credit to Blackburn. They came and they seized the opportunity and they were efficient in front of goal and pretty ruthless, so all credit them.
Yeah, and this is, it's such a competitive league, isn't it, the Championship? And I think, you know, we talk about this, like Blackburn are 17th in the division, Sunderland are in 13th place, so what, there's 6 points between you in the division. But you know, Blackburn could still go down potentially. I think Sunderland are probably safe. We've said this already. They're 5 points clear of the relegation zone. And you're right, and they made you look like schoolboys on Monday, didn't they? In with that performance. But Blackburn gave Newcastle a really good game at Ewood Park in the FA Cup as well. And they gave us a real scare, and we could have gone out with the FA Cup that night if it had not been for Martin Dubravka's heroics in the penalty shootout. So I think it's really easy for me to sit here and take the piss out of you, as much as I'd love to. We also have to be realistic that Blackburn are a bit of a coupon buster side. They are, yeah. You know, there will be games where they turn up and they get the result they need, and there'll be other games where they just don't. And that's ultimately why they are where they are in the league. They will probably do enough to stay up, I think. But it's an interesting one. I tried to touch on it before, but I've got to go back to it from about Monday's game. About Saturday's game at St James's Park. I don't think there's been a game in our season that has represented our whole season in the way that that game has. In the fact that it had some highs, it had lows, it had injuries. It had player trying to play on and then turned out he's got a cruciate ligament injury. It had sending off. It had two VAR penalties, it was one VAR penalty, but there were two penalties given in the game. Had a last minute winner. Just an incredible kind of collection of events, I suppose. To the point where obviously we I did a instant reaction for True Faith on their Patreon channel, and my question to Adam was, what the fuck is that? I had nothing else to say to him at that stage, and it really took me some time to kind of almost, with instant reactions, when you do those, you want, what you want is you want the emotion of it, and you want to capture as much of that as you can. But like, just trying to collect your thoughts about what happened in the game, because so much happened, was crazy. it was absolutely mad, and it was a really special ground to be in the last kind of 20 minutes or so. But the first 60-70, it was becoming quite toxic. There was, you know, I sit in the family enclosure, which is quite a chilled place. There was a guy behind me I thought was gonna have an aneurysm, because he was getting that angry. And I thought, God, you're gonna have a stroke or something. Like, something's gonna happen to you, because he was so seething at what was going on. And it only felt like when it went 3-2, like the tide changed and all the momentum changed. And I think we are a bit of a confidence momentum side at the minute. We need kind of something to go our way, and then it's just about building on that. And I think, you know, if our second goal was allowed yesterday, and I mean, it's tight. It's a tight offside. It probably is offside, but it's tight. But if that's allowed, you know, we don't go on to lose that. Oh, sorry. We don't go on to drop points in that game.
Yeah.
You know, we comfortably see it out. But yeah, it's nice to have something to play for at this stage of the season. But I'll not rub that in. look, I think from a Sunderland perspective, six games left, right? I mean, what, you're not going to go down. You're not going to get in the playoffs.
No.
This is about shoot. Is this not just about players either playing for their future, well, playing for their futures wherever they might be?
Possibly, yes. Possibly. I know we've got Bristol City, haven't we? And I can't call it. I just can't call it with regards to a result for that, or what first 11 he's going to play, to be perfectly honest with you, or what random total they're going to come up with for the crowd attendance. Oh man, utterly bizarre.
What was it, 42,000?
Allegedly. Allegedly, aye.
Now, if anyone's seen the pictures online, Anth, like I've seen... I've seen higher of attendance as a Heaton Stan, I think.
That's over.
When I said 42,000, I thought, you're taking the piss. Now, if for anyone who doesn't know, the football attendances, the guidance from the Premier League and the Football League is it's tickets sold for the game.
Yeah.
So it's not amount of people that actually come through the turnstile on the day. Now, for me, call me oldish cynic. I'll not say older, no offense. but like attendance, like the clues in the title in it, like the first part of that word is attend. Now, I work for a company. Now, the way that we measure attendance is whether someone comes into work or not. Right. Otherwise, you've always got 100% attendance because everyone's got a contract, right? So it doesn't work for me. It just doesn't make sense. I can't get my head around it, mate. So but that's the guidance. Now, I think the reason for that is to be more attractive to your commercial partners, to your TV broadcast deals, all of this. I feel like I'm getting a flashback to Saturday's podcast here. But to do all of that, the higher your attendance, the better it looks.
Yep.
So I think really that's kind of that's the motivation behind it, is to make the numbers look better. But it, you know, honestly, like I looked at it and I thought Nissan must be playing triple time on Bank Holiday Monday because it was sparse. Now, admittedly, I think some of those pictures were taken at 5-1 or at 4-0,
yeah,
or at 3-0, maybe 2. But there were, you know, I think I'm not sure I've seen one that's made the ground look like it was anything like that amount of players. That amount of fans in the stands, though. It seems a bit odd.
No, honestly, from people I know who were there, because I was actually working overtime, not at Nissan though. I was working overtime on Monday. Well, my normal shift, but people I know who were there said they reckoned at the start of the match when the game kicked off, maybe 32,000 and a half, 33,000 there. nowhere near 42. I know that there were a lot of kids tickets sold. I think they did that whole promotional thing with regards to £5 or however much to get into the match. And when I listened to the commentary in the office on Radio Newcastle, because I love Benno, even though he's sun through and through, he's not scared to speak his mind or call people out at the club or the way they're playing. Love him. But you could hear a lot of high-pitched screams and a lot of woo, and all, especially towards the end when Rigg scored. The only salvation that day was Rigg getting a goal and obviously him getting more experience and building up his confidence. Fantastic. Love that. Just a shame there was no one there to see it hardly. So, yeah, like you say, it's purely, yeah, I think it's to do with to make an more attractive proposition, isn't it, from a commercial viewpoint with, oh, look at this, we're getting four. Look at the attendance, we're in the top 10 in however or whatever in Europe. I think they did a rundown in the from the Premier League down and then in Europe. And we were in amongst it based on those attendances. But whether or not they're a true reflection, obviously, you know, we'll sort of pour a little bit of scorn on that because we could see different, couldn't we?
Yeah. There's a really famous, well, for Newcastle fans, I suppose, anyway, there's a really famous game. So we played Spurs in 2015, and there was a boycott arranged for the match. I don't know if you remember this.
So yes, Saturday, I do.
It was either 2 o'clock or something like that on Sky, or 4 o'clock it might have been. But it was basically, they were like, right, this is the game we're going to choose to boycott because we want to make a point, make a message. And it was similar. There was this announcement of the attendance, and it was like 48,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I reckon it was like 27, 28. I mean, it's still you know, a lot of people because there's still people who would go despite what was going on. And, you know, the people want to go to the match, not bothered about the boycott or what have you. But it doesn't make a mockery of the entire thing. And I just want to say as well, Anth, I know, like, you know, there's all sorts of piss take songs about, you know, it's £5 for, you know, £5 for, or was it £5 for adults, kids go free, all this kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But look, nobody should ridicule cheap football. No. Now, there's a reason it's cheap, is because if you're not selling out, you've got the scope to do that. And that's why it's, you know, it's not necessarily cheap to go and watch Newcastle on a regular basis unless you're on one of the long-term price freeze deals that Mike Ashley's legacy is still hitting into the club. But I'd never sit here and ridicule good value football because I think, you know, if you're going to get, you know, the young generation interested and engaged, you need to give them a chance to access it.
100%. Totally so agree with you.
It's about how you do it, isn't it? And how you get the balance of that right. And actually, reading between the lines, I think the ballots at Newcastle are probably more successful in the family enclosure than anywhere else. Because you need to go at least one adult, one child. Not everyone who applies for a ballot place will do that. My main thing is if they sell out of those adult and child places and there's still space in the family enclosure, fill it with adults at that stage. That's fine. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, find a way of filling the ground. I'll move on from tickets, otherwise I could be talking about that for the next 25 minutes. Let's talk about this coming weekend. And so Newcastle are travelling to Craven Cottage. On Saturday. Do you know what the score was the last time we were there, Anth? Last time Newcastle played Fulham?
Was this the... What? Come on then.
Oh, it was the FA Cup. Ah, actually, the FA Cup.
Yeah, of course I know the score.
Yeah,
thanks for reminding us, John.
So, no. So, so we comfortably beat Fulham in the FA Cup. And the last time we played them in the league, we beat them 4-1 last season. And that was almost the start of our kind of push, really, because we'd... Start of the season, we had a decent start against Forest 2-0 at St James's, and then we kind of just kept drawing games, and then we lost at Liverpool in the last minute, probably should have won, and then we'd got to play Fulham, and everything just clicked. I think they had a player sent off in like the first 10-15 minutes, and then we just battered them. Almiron scored an absolute worldie. Bruno plays a chipped through ball to him and Almiron volleys it. Superb goal. So I'm hoping that this is our, like, that this is what kind of gets us to where we need to. Now, if I look at kind of how Fulham have been doing, they've won two of their last five. They've the last game they lost at Forest. They were losing 3-1 at Sheffield United. That's Sheffield United 2 Newcastle beat 8-0 at Bramall Lane, by the way, just to kind of put that out there. So they're not a world beating side. And don't get me wrong, you know, Newcastle were excellent that day, but you know, no team should be getting beat 8-0 at home. They came back to draw with Fulham. Fulham came back to draw with them, I should say. So look, they're not on great form. Fulham, I don't think, but this is the problem, isn't it, with form? Sometimes it goes out the window. We desperately, I think, need that win. I think if we get 3 points, and then you say we've had 7 points out the last nine, we've done well. I think the problem is, for me, who on earth are we going to play, right? Because we've kind of got a patchwork back four at the minute. Trippier's injured currently. Rumour is he's going to be out for another 2 to 3 weeks. Livramento's out. Which then means that we're playing probably Emil Kraft at right back, who was brought on Saturday and then got hooked because he was clearly responsible for at least one of the goals. So we've got that issue. Even at left back, we're probably playing Lewis Hall at left back. Then he came off with fatigue last night. So again, hopefully he's fit enough. Mm. So at the minute, we're playing Bernard Scher at centre half, which is looked okay. I just pray that Paul Dummett doesn't come on, you know, with all due respect to him, because, you know, the mistake he made, you know, we can't have that happen in the Premier League on Saturday. Midfield probably will again pick itself. It's a choice probably between Anderson and Willock again as to who starts. Longstaff continues to play with injections in his ankle. And thankfully, Anthony Gordon's back. I think we really missed him last night. And it might have added a bit of edge for him in terms of the whole Everton angle and the way that he left Everton and everything else. But actually, I think sometimes he's better out of those. He's a little bit, you know how Pickford gets himself overly wound up for Newcastle?
Oh, yes.
I think like Gordon's got the potential maybe to go down that road with Everton as well. And I just kind of hope he is more level-headed than that. So I think maybe it wasn't the worst thing in the world. I mean, we missed his quality, no doubt, but I think he might have let that occasion get to him a bit too much. Mm-hmm. But I think that's our biggest issue, is that we're back to kind of where we were in December, where we've got 11 or 12 first team fit players. And then, like, I think someone described our bench yesterday, we had two keepers, Richie, Willock, Dummett, and a bunch of kids. Like, that was our bench. Like, it's crazy. Your thoughts on how Newcastle can do against Fulham?
Ooh, on the pitch, well, I think you'll get a win. Off the pitch, when's the swimming pool up and running at Fulham? That's a strange one, isn't it? Or, you know, if the supporters want to have a cheese board before they go in, or it's a funny little club, isn't it? It's a nice little club. I've never been. I've supported a few of my friends who've been to away day down there. Said it's one of the better away days. It's location wise, the ground, obviously they've built the new stand, and it's, you know, but sorry, on the pitch, I'm getting a little bit sidetracked. On the pitch, I think yous'll win. Fulham are an all or nothing team for me. They turn in a fantastic performance, play football the way it should be played, you know, and they get good results. But then they might slip up against one of the so-called lesser teams in the Premiership. I'm not saying that's what Newcastle are, by the way. But I'm definitely not saying that. But I think yous have got the capability, even with the injury list and the makeshift squad patched up, whatever capacity. I think yous could go down there and get a result. I do.
They're a really interesting side, Fulham, because I think they're expected now to be among that top 10, probably. That's kind of what I think the fan base expect. And in the fan base, there's a lot of pushback around, and rightly so. We've just been talking about ticket prices. Like, some of Fulham's season ticket prices are £3,000 a year for their new stand, which, and that's general admission, and that's not, that's not corporate. That doesn't include a meal or anything like that. So it's pretty extortionate. From that point of view, so there's a lot of uproar from Fulham fans around kind of the pricing anyway, and if you're going to charge those kind of prices, you need to kind of put up you know, a show on the pitch. And I think this is kind of why there was a lot of discontent, I think, with Arsenal when they went to the Emirates. You know, a lot of their prices went up, and but they pretty much filled it. But there was a lot of unrest about Wenger because they didn't challenge for a trophy for 10 years, pretty much, or, you know, or a trophy they felt like they should be challenging for. You know, and that's a fair argument. But I think the guy who owns Fulham is a guy called Shard Khan, who also owns the Jacksonville Jaguars. And American owners notoriously are not afraid to charge fans a premium to go and watch sport.
Yeah.
Now, it's a very different kind of business model in the States, the franchise model. So you basically put it best way I can, you know, you pay a license for your franchise of however many millions of dollars to enter the league. And then once you enter the league, you're part of that system. And that's how you enter. And that's why teams will move. So in the last 10, 15 years, we've seen the likes of the St. Louis Rams move back to LA, where they'd been when they first formed, or where they'd been for a while. The Raiders moved from Oakland to Las Vegas. The Oakland Raiders, probably one of the most famous, like, kind of brands, I suppose, in American sport. So for them to move to Vegas, because Vegas basically said, well, we'll build you a stadium for nothing and you can play here. They were like, all right, great. You're going to build a $1.5 billion stadium. Brilliant. Bring it on. Let's go.
Yeah.
When do we leave? and this is the problem, really, with the American sport, and because it's all about the money. And I think what Shard Khan needs to remember is that there is a group of fans there that you don't want to disengage, and we've touched on it already. If you price people out, that is going to affect kind of how you build your fan base. And football's a bit different to American football, where there's 32 genuinely world-class American football sides, but they're the only 32 sides in the world, right? Which is why they say, oh, world champions. But they're the only ones, really, that play at that standard, right? And that's why it's competitive, and that's why the league's built to be competitive, to make sure that it you know, so the worse you do, the better your draft pick, all this kind of thing. The Premier League's not like that, right? It can't be like that, right? Because the top six, the big greedy six, they don't want any more qualifying for the Champions League. They don't want any of that. So if you price out all these people in these mid-table clubs, you're not going to get like lots of international Fulham fans in the same way that you're going to get lots of international Man United and Liverpool fans. And Newcastle are going to struggle to grow their international base, despite the fact they've got the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia owning them. And that's a really big opportunity for them to grow a fan base there. They're going to struggle in other areas. They are. Maybe Australia is one of those areas. We'll get on to talking about that at some point. You know, maybe it's the South of America, because we obviously went to Atlanta pre-season America last year. Like, but the opportunities aren't going to be the same for Fulham. They're not going to be able to fill those seats at that expense with tourists. People are not going to be like, I'm going to fly 10,000 miles to go and watch, you know, a team that used to have Alexander Mitrovic up front for them. Like, they're not like, yeah. Like, and I mean that in the nicest way, with all respect to Fulham fans. I've totally digressed, Anth. You guys play Bristol. On Saturday. I know. God, what a pod. You guys play Bristol on Saturday. What's your thoughts?
Well, the excitement's palpable, isn't it? You can sense it. I honestly don't know what to expect or what first 11 we're going to put out. I know Dak made a little appearance, and he hasn't really done a lot or pulled up trees in a red and white shirt, but he made a nice little cameo appearance when he came on as a sub on Monday. I think he got a 6, which is a good rating out of 10, considering anyone that's got a 3 or a 4 or 5. Clark's obviously come on. I don't know why I brought him on, to be fair, because I don't think he's, again, one of these who's fully fit just yet, and maybe it wasn't the
best time to give him a
run out.
Is that not just about building his minutes the month?
Possibly, but I just thought it was a bit, the timing of it when we were like 3-4-0 down. I thought, you know, Rig I can understand, but with Clark, maybe he's, I suppose so. I mean, the game was lost, wasn't it? So he could just have a run at them, I suppose. So, and he did have a run at them. So, but we beat Huddersfield under 21s the other night 4-2, and Louis Hamia got on the score sheet, so maybe he might get another chance. AJ was back, Alicia was back, so maybe he might get a chance. I don't know how far he is away from the first 11. It's more a question of who's he going to put out and what kind of what formation are we going to have, because I'm at a total loss every game at the moment. It's like it's just like a mishmash. And I suppose that's all Dodds can do with what's at his disposal. And obviously he's not going to get the position full time now. He's not going to be in the hat for the manager's job, because he was originally, and now I think the bookies have wrote him off based on our performances of late. So I can't even call it. I've got no idea. I don't know what the crowd's going to be like, how many's going to be there, how they're going to react, if we're going to go one down. I've got no idea. Yeah. We'll just have to wait and see.
I think if Dodds had got you in the playoffs, and at least, but I think if he had, I think that may have been enough to have the board have a serious think about him. My feeling on this is that they knew when they got rid of Beal, I think they've got someone lined up for the summer. Probably will still, someone like that. But I think they've got someone lined up, or they've got a succession plan. They're like, look, we're just going to give it to you to the end of the season. We'll work on getting along to it. I don't really think he's ever been there. I think it's kind of like the Solskjaer situation, where he went in at Man United, and I know he ended up getting the job permanently for a bit because of how he did. But I think it's been one of those where the decision's been made with a view to, look, we know that you're going to go. And that's, to be honest, that's the right way to do it. If you know there's someone else, you know, if Mick Beale wasn't working, they got him out. And then it was about, right, actually, we need to think about who's going to come in next. And I think they've got an idea of who they want, Anth. But we have done 40-odd minutes. I want to apologise for those viewers on YouTube for... on camera, off camera, background on, background off. Just as we try and get, we're going to try and get rid of these technical gremlins. So, apologies for that. We are working on it. I promise you. We want to improve the quality of this every single week. Please leave us feedback. Let us know what you thought of what we said, because that's probably the most important bit of all of this. And give us a like if you like the podcast. And yeah, just get in touch with us. We're on Instagram. We are on X, which obviously used to be known as Twitter. Would love to hear your thoughts. But we will be back with an episode next week. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.